What's up?
Lots of things. I mean, we are, in the middle of the Nozbe promo. I just did my first webinar. Lots of, crazy things happening, lots of work. Marketing department, lots of marketing things in the same time because we have this spring cleaning promo, spring for the Northern Hemisphere.
Yes.
Yeah, I wake up at 6:55 normally,
You're crazy.
and one of my routines is at some point to start journaling, and then I always after I journal, I go and check Twitter, and then I'm like, whoa, you're online, you're up, and what's up, right? I was really surprised.
Yeah, the video was like, this is an experimental landing. This is harder than the last time. We don't expect a successful landing. Oh, we did it. Well, here we go.
Landed.
So that was amazing. Yeah.
Yesterday I was 69.
Hmm.
And today, for the first time, I was 70.
Oh, no.
I don't think it's a permanent thing. I think it's like a fluke, or something. I don't know. But it's like a wake-up call.
Right.
CEOs
are CEOs. You're not... Well, you are. I'm not. A CEO. Over the last half a year, today was maybe the second time I would wake up before 8. One time was like I was traveling, so I had to wake up early to catch my train. And today, I had to wake up at 6:45 because at 7:20 was a SpaceX launch. So obviously I had to see it. So yeah, I'm a total nerd. I'm sorry, but it was quite exciting because they did succeed with a landing. Which, now it's like, oh, third landing, like, whatever. Like, it's like,
right.
This is a thing we do now. But even though it's a third landing, first of all, it's still exciting in general. And second of all, it is quite a harder landing than the previous two. Because it was a satellite mission for the geostationary transfer orbit. So it wasn't just going to an orbit like 400 kilometers up, but to an orbit 30,000 kilometers up, okay? So like it had really little energy fuel left to perform the landing. And so it was coming in at twice the speed, four times the acceleration, eight times the heat. And instead of performing this landing burn with one engine, it did a landing burn with three engines, which is like, it's a lot because then you'll have accelerations of like 5 or 8 Gs. So it's like really extreme and it's a so-called suicide burn. So it has to like, the engines have much more power than the gravity pulls the rocket down. So it has to slow down to zero at exactly the same time its position is zero above the barge, right? So the last time they tried to do that on two missions back, they punched a hole in the barge. So they didn't think this would succeed, but it did. So that was cool. Well worth waking up at 6:45.
Yeah, I wake up at 6:55 normally.
You're crazy.
And one of my routines is at some point to start journaling, and then I always after I journal, I go and check Twitter. And then I'm like, whoa, you're online, you're up. What's up, right?
Yeah,
I was really surprised.
Yeah, that's it's kind of cool that you noticed it. Like I couldn't hide even if I wanted to.
Yeah, but I saw the landing and it was really amazing. And then what they said is that really they didn't expect to land properly.
Yeah.
So they really managed expectations, like really lowered expectations, but
oh, yeah.
Then really they succeeded to land like just perfectly. And it was really good.
Yeah, the video was like, this is an experimental landing. This is harder than the last time. We don't expect a successful landing. Oh, we did it. Well, here we go.
Landed.
So that was amazing. Yeah. I can't wait until the barge comes to port, and then we'll probably see like high resolution, like really nice quality video from the landing. Because here it was like a barge, then it was just bright light, and then the rocket was already landed, right? Because yeah, as it was flying in, it would shake up the whole barge and ionize the air. And so the satellite uplink with the video didn't work, in those few seconds.
Exactly. So I was also expecting to the full, you know, landing trajectory, but instead the barge was empty and then it was full and there was a rocket there.
Elon Musk's anti-barge missile program failed again.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Before we go into the main topic, I guess we should do a few small updates, follow-up pieces. So one thing, you were supposed to check the book count in your Audible account.
Yep.
So what is it? What's the number?
176.
176 books.
Yeah.
Wow. Over how many years?
I started in 2010, so it will be 6 years.
All right. So that's
30.
That's like 30 books a year. Yeah, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's very cool. Very cool. So for me, it's 28 books in my Audible library at the moment. I signed up just before the new year of 2015, so I had one book I read in 2014, then 16 books last year, and this year I've had 11 new books in my Audible library already, but we're already like third of the year in. So if you extrapolate, that's 30 books easily, right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting. It also, in the stats, I found the number that I spent 11 days, 10 hours and 4 minutes listening to Audible, which is a lot and not a lot. You know, an average throughout, you know, the whole of 2015 and until now in 2016, that's 30 minutes a day, which makes a lot of sense, really, right? It's 30 minutes every day for reading. That's not bad. And it's like exactly what you said, that it's like living a double life, right? Because it's 11 days, 10 hours, which I was also resting. You know, resting from work, resting from sitting on a chair in front of a computer, relaxing, you know, having a breath of fresh air outside, or maybe at home, like doing some housework, or maybe also having a walk, a run, or being at the gym, you know, also being physically active, which I quite likely would otherwise be if I didn't also have the excuse of wanting to read the book, right? So it's pretty amazing that I spent this time, which, you know, isn't really that much anyway. And I also did other, you know, productive, useful things in that time. So that's pretty amazing.
I mean, just think about logic here. I mean, for example, just today, you noticed on Twitter that whenever I do a run, you get a push notification about it because you're my friend on Runkeeper. But the best part was that I had this gap of 1 hour between recording one interview to one podcast and the interview to the other podcast. And because over the last week I was really busy with marketing of Nosby promo, I didn't do much exercise. I mean, today in the morning I went to the swimming pool, but I was like, I didn't have enough running and enough bike riding this week.
Right.
And so like between these two interviews, I was like, I need to go outside. But my first, like, my this is what's funny. My first argument for that was, because I need to advance in the book Deep Work. And then, coincidentally, I will also be running.
Right.
You know? But my main motivation was that before the podcast, I want to just advance in the book. So I have to go out to run. You know? So this was I really liked it. Then I realized what I was thinking, you know, that the first motivation was the book, actually. And then second was actually the running part.
Yeah. You know, you're laughing, but I have that a lot, right? It became normal, and I don't mind. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, totally. It's a good thing. So, yeah, my count on this running, on this book listening, is not accurate. I don't think so, because I read most of these books that I have on my library, so it wouldn't be 22 days, which says on the Audible. But Audible, I remember, had different, you know, versions of Audible app.
Yeah,
and I don't know where this comes from. But anyway, What I checked also with the stats is that I haven't added lots of titles recently. So I have still lots of credits, for example, for this year. And I haven't added lots of new books this year. So having said that, and having, you know, and I have still, I think, 5 or 6 books in the pipeline that I haven't read.
Wow.
Right? So so I'm actually right now in the process of actually changing the way I listen to things, and also do what you did, is I will have to really curate the amount of podcasts I'm listening to in order to actually read the books. Because podcasts are fun and everything, but actually books, as per our last episode,
right,
are where we get really the big value.
Exactly.
Where the big bucks are, right? Exactly. So that's why, you know, having said that, I see that I have a few still books in the pipeline, plus lots of credits unused, and my credit count will renew in November. Mm-hmm. So I really need to push this a little bit more, so to listen to books.
All right. So actually, you said something that I think is a good advice, which is, I found it useful to have like more than one book like already in the library on Audible, because I found that if I have just one, the one I'm listening to, then when I finish, I'll just stop listening for a few days or a week. Maybe mm-hmm. I'll listen to a bunch more podcasts instead of, you know, jumping into the next book, and again getting more value out of that than with podcasts. But if I like pick a few books that I think I'll like in advance, then when I finish, maybe I'll take a few days, you know, 2-3 days of a break, and catch up with the podcast I do care about, and then like there's like zero friction to get into the next book because I already like downloaded and picked. So I think that's a good tip.
Yeah, and also what I found out recently useful, I mean, not in this case right now, because I'm actually reading just this one book that you recommended,
yeah,
that we'll talk about, but the last year I've found myself sometimes listening to 3 books at once, because they were 3 different books, and depending on my mood, I was, you know, listening to one book and then to the other. I don't know if it's really,
I don't think that's a good idea, actually.
Yeah, I know, but I talked to Evelina, my wife, about it, and she told me that she was also like that, like reading books, you know, she's a big book reader, that she sometimes also reads to a few books at once. But when I actually thought about it, the thing was that I would then very often, you know, change between these 3 books for a while, but then would stick with the one to the end, you know, like at some point, like, so I think it was like a warm-up period, you know, I would like read like 10-20% of one book, and then 20% of the other, and then another of the other, and then I would just finish one and then finish all of them, like, but at the first like initial stage, I would switch between the books depending on the mood, for some reason, I don't know.
All right, let's cut it short, because we have to get to the main topic again and not spend the whole episode with follow-up again.
Good idea.
But one last thing I wanted to mention is make a quick update on our weekly way in which like weekly review is best done at least once a month.
Yep.
Which is, we stopped doing it for a while because I've been doing good, you've been doing pretty good, I think, so like, there isn't that much pressure, at least for me, to keep doing that. But I wanted to make this update because it's now 2 months since I first achieved 70 kilograms. Mm-hmm. Achieved that, let me see, on March 3rd. So today is May 6th. So it's 2 months, right?
Yep.
And one of the things I've been concerned about is that, like, wow, this has been great. Like, really very fast, you know, decline in my weight in a few months, over 10 kilograms. Wow. But does it stick, right? Is it sustainable? Because I had one such kind of episode in the past that I would lose a lot of weight in not much time, but it bounced right back up, right? And so so you're concerned about it, though, I thought it would be good. And so far, 2 months in, I think it will be good. There's been some ups and downs, like between 70 and like 71.5 as I've been traveling. And this never helps for a lot of reasons. But still, last week I've been 70.4 kilogram average. This week I've also been 70.4 kilogram average. And again, some ups and downs, but still, less than 71 kilograms. So this is doing good.
I'm really proud of you, man. I mean, this is fantastic. This is great news. And as we discussed, you know, your body will adjust even more, you know, to this new weight. And yeah. As long as you keep it up. So really, really good job there. On my front, actually, it's been 2 years since I actually, like 2 years and 2 months. No, 2 years and a month, maybe, that I finished my diet. You know, when I was really also on a diet to lose weight dramatically. And so 2 years ago, I was somewhere, I would actually have to check it. I don't know if I will be able to see that, but I was somewhere around, you know, 67 kilograms, 67, 66 kilograms 2 years ago.
Right.
So so after 2 years, I've been between 66 and 68 kilograms most of the time, which was good. Then, you know, when Christmas came, I would be around 68. and then after that, it would be around more 67. But recently, what I discovered is that I was a little bit, I had really a hectic month with some sports, but also with lots of, you know, things to go to, you know, lots of travels, lots of irregular eatings, like lots of irregularity. And, you know, also a slight use of alcohol, you know, and things.
Right.
So, so with all that, I think I a little bit lost my, you know, focus on that, you know, and we haven't done weight in a while, so right. So the accountability wasn't there. So the last weeks I was around 68, and for example, this week I was 67. You know, in the beginning of the week 67 and a half, and then 68, and I was hovering between 68 and 67. But yesterday I was 69, and today for the first time I was 70.
Oh no.
I don't think it's a permanent thing. I think it's like a fluke, you know, or something. I don't know. But it's like a wake-up call.
Right.
You know, 70 kilograms. I don't want to be 70 kilograms. I mean, at my height, this is unacceptable. And of course, giving the whole trend, I don't think it's a permanent situation here.
Right.
But it's a great wake-up call after 2 years that, you know, that, like, for example, in my case, I am not this kind of person that will, you know, that can just slack off and not watch out what they are eating.
Right.
I have to watch out what I'm eating, and I have to keep, you know, my guard up at all times. And this is exhausting and this is frustrating, but this is how it is. And if I want to, you know, be in this shape, and I am in a great shape still, so it's not, you know, it's not a drama situation here. And like, I just did a fantastic run, and I like last Sunday I did an 80 kilometer fantastic bike ride. So it's not a problem with that. But if I neglect diet right now because I'm in a great shape, this might turn bad, and then as the scale today indicated, this might turn bad. So
right.
I'm not happy with today's weight in. I'm not happy with the situation here, but it's, you know, it's just a one-time situation that I, you know, I climbed so fast, and I don't understand why just 1 kilogram from one day to another, actually 2 kilograms, you know, within the week, you know, of a difference. So, and I haven't been eating that much. I don't know why, but I don't care. This just, you know, again, turned my focus again on eating and on making sure that I don't eat crap. Mm. And then I really, you know, I'm not allowed to slack off too much on that. I just have to, you know, make sure that I keep with my, you know, diet, keep with my diet routine. And, I don't have to be strict about it, as we discussed. We don't have to be like 100% strict about it, but we have to be more focused on what we are eating and not to lose that focus. Because if we do, then the kilograms made it up, you know, over the period of time. So, yeah, that's my update.
That was supposed to be a quick update, man.
I'm sorry, but it's important.
You're not good at cutting down on words.
It's important, man. I mean, seriously.
No, it is. I understand. It's fine. And yeah, what you're saying.
I mean, you should have been, you know, should have skipped the update after this. I mean, all right.
Well, you know, if you do need more accountability, we can do the weekly weigh-in actually every week again.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. So we're going to do something quite an unusual, a different format of an episode today. Something we only did once before, and talk about a book, you know, try to like discuss some ideas that we've learned from it and just like see where it leads us, right? We did it once, actually. I thought we never did it, but we actually did with the book Why We Get Fat in something like 24, 22nd episode, something like that. Long time ago, really. And recently, I read this book called Deep Work by Cal Newport, and I just found it very, very interesting, very good, and very relevant for me and my life in this moment. Have you actually finished the book? I know you started reading it.
I haven't finished it yet. I'll tell you where I am at this point. I am at chapter 6 of 9, so I am 3 hours left. So I'm past half the book right now.
Okay. So Deep Work is a kind of book that's about kind of one thing, one idea. And we discussed this last week. It's really more than that, right? There's a bunch of nuance and different ideas about it and reasons why and strategies in achieving it and whatnot. But it's focused on this like one kind of core concept of deep work, right? Which is really what made it very powerful for me, like very... It really stuck in my mind because it's like 8 hours of conditioning your brain to this thing, which I already kind of agreed with, something I already believed in, but wasn't very good at, still am not, right? And so this is kind of a very good thing, a very efficient kind of persuasion device and like... learning device to learn more about it.
Yeah, I was actually surprised why you recommended it so much. I thought, you know, okay, deep work. You know, I by seeing the title, I already know what it's going to be about. So why should I be reading this? You know, and you're like, yeah, you have to read it totally. I'm like, seriously, man, I know all this, all about this. I mean, this is what I write about, you know, this is what I stand for. So why should I be reading more about it? But it's like the same when I do read productivity books and you know, these kind of the books. You always learn something new. You always learn something different, or you're, as you said, conditioned your brain for something. And speaking of follow-up, actually, I did what you recommended to do, is that after a run, I'm actually jotting down notes of the things that I heard during my, you know, stint with the book. It's been very helpful. It's a great tip. So listen to Radek in this. I have really a few here talking points already, you know, ironed out. And that's why I'm really prepared for this show.
Awesome. So like I said, like you, I picked this book because I very liked another book from the author called So Good They Can't Ignore You, would also recommend it. And also when I posted some time on Twitter this screenshot from my notes, which showed the titles of books I read this year, and two titles I was like, work in progress, right? And like before I got to actually reading this book, I just was somewhere on the list. Someone told me on Twitter, this was really good, right? And so I was like, okay, so I have to listen to it. So Deep Work, I guess I should kind of explain what the core idea is about. So what is deep work? So it's kind of a mode of working, I guess. It's a state of mind when you work at highest levels of focus and attention. Okay,
it's like this concept of flow. When they in another book, there was this concept of flow when a programmer, for example, is programming, and he's like in this state of mind where everything just goes, and then there is this flow of focus. I mean, he's just focusing on that. The outside world doesn't exist. Like, you're just immersed, like, deeply in your work. And this is actually, and this book is all about that.
Yeah, the two concepts are deeply connected. So deep work is a work in flow, right? When you're like really like disconnected from everything else, because like 100% of your focus is on the work. And the work itself is deep, right? It has to be the kind of work that requires our high expertise, right? Not something we could easily delegate. It's work that's creative, generally. Like, it's not it's not something that's repetitive, not logistical or communication kind of work, but a work where you make something in a way, at least generally, right? And it's a kind of work that hits the limits of our minds and stretches them. So work like writing or designing, programming generally, or studying, you know, reading and learning something hard, doing deliberate practice. This is the kind of work that can be deep, right? I mean, you can do writing while on the other screen you have your Slack and Facebook and Twitter, right? And you're constantly distracted, and that's not deep work. But when you do this kind of work in flow, that's deep work.
Yeah, basically uninterrupted work. And what the author was like was saying from the very beginning is that in this world right now, when we are connected, what you just said, right, it's really hard to get into the deep work, you know. And there was another book which is called Chasing Daylight. It's about an ex CEO of KPMG who was diagnosed with cancer and was dying. It's about how he designed his last three months of life, when he was about to die. And one of the things that he wrote in this book was that for him, being the CEO of a very big company, he was used to doing several things at once all the time. So for him, right, when he, like, one of the things that he was designing was to have great moments with people, speaking to them. And he said that it was so difficult for him to be with somebody on the phone, right, and being focused only on this person. Like, his mind would wander off, you know, to check my email, to check some things, to look around. Like, he couldn't really literally focus on this one person. Like, having this moment with this person was so difficult for him. And that's why when I read, you know, this book, when I was reading this book, I was also thinking about that it's so hard for us. And that's why I understand right now more why this book is so important and why people should be reading this book, because many people might not realize that this kind of mode, this kind of work we actually need, and they are not aware that something like this exists, you know.
Right. It's like, you know, with the book Why We Get Fat, if you were to summarize it in three words, it would be eat less carbs. There's more nuance, but you could summarize like that. And It's slightly controversial, right? But it's a simple idea. And like, here you could summarize the idea of the book as in do more deep work.
Yeah, or avoid interruptions.
Well, you could say that. You know, like, there's nuance in the phrase deep work. So do more deep work. It's something I already agreed with, right? It's something that won't be controversial. I don't think so, at least. Not for everyone. This would be a natural thing to do. In fact, for almost everyone, that's not a natural thing to do. But it's not very controversial, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so what the book tries to convey is, first of all, why this is like really important and more important than ever, perhaps. And why people don't do it, why you should do it, why it's worth it, the strategies in achieving it, more like tips and tricks, more stories about it. So like, for me, I learned a lot from the book, like new knowledge, new things. And that's like maybe, you know, like 50% of the value from the book. And the other 50 is, it's an idea I already get, but I need to hear someone speak to me for 8 hours
about this,
explaining in all the different ways possible that I should do more of it, because it's not easy, but it's hard.
Yeah. I mean, and there were some things, I mean, I don't know how you want to, you know, go with the show, but for example, there are some things that I knew about, some stories I heard about, but I got them. I really got them when reading this book. So one of the like major things was, for example, my favorite businesswoman, Marissa Mayer. Right. Like, Marissa Mayer fired all her teleworkers because she decided, you know, that that, you know, people should be aligned together in the office, right? Which is like, which is 100% against what I believe in. But because I knew that she was smart, I gave her the benefit of a doubt that maybe, you know, maybe she, maybe Yahoo was such a mess that she really needed to have people, you know, back in the office to just realign them together, and then she would let them, you know, go to work remotely, which never happened. And he said in the book that actually for her, she didn't understand that people, when they were not logging in to the system, and they would just log in to check email, basically, it means they were not working, you know? Right. Because for her, the main indicator was busyness.
Exactly.
Busyness, not business. Busyness. Not not really getting stuff done. And we know, you know, in our company, we know that it's hard to fake work when you are working remotely, because you know, if you go for several stretches of faking work, we will know, we will find out that you're faking work. You know,
if you go for a run in the middle of the day, I'll get it on my wrist.
That's another thing, but really, that's the thing, that you know, it's hard to fake work when you're working remotely, because when you work remotely, you have to deliver stuff. You know, you have to deliver the goods. You know, and you have to deliver the outcomes of your work. If you're in an open office, in a big office, you can just be busy. You can be, you know, on all these meetings. You can be showing up everywhere on everybody's radar. And everybody will say, yeah, this is a guy, he stays up late. He's like, he's, you know, he's busy all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, and this is something that people, that she didn't get, you know, and that many people don't get. And this is when I understood that she was just, she's just wrong. She's just, you know, mistaken. She just doesn't understand that this doesn't work like that, you know, and
right.
Because she is like that, actually. She's busy. And,
yeah, the book actually made a very good point. there's a small chapter called, What About Jack Dorsey?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And like, and here's the thing, like, it's easy to, like, what we talked about last time with biographies, actually, like, I warned against trying to take too much from biographies of our heroes, because they're unique, they're different people in different circumstances, right? And like, it's so easy to try to take over all of the values of our heroes, right? Like, the big name, big shot, like, CEOs of great companies, right? But CEOs are CEOs. You're not, well, you are, I'm not, a CEO, right? If you're a CEO of a big company, you might live a, you know, a famously distracted work life that's filled mostly with shallow work, not deep work. But so what, right? CEOs have a quite a unique job. It's an exception, not a rule, and you shouldn't be so quick to assume this also applies to you. Because CEOs are all about decision making, right? Like, pattern matching situations, mm-hmm. and making decisions on them, right? If you need something, you know, researched or figured out, you can delegate them. You're a CEO of a big company, right? But and the unique position for you is to like make the decisions, you know, on top of the knowledge you already have.
Yeah.
But most people are not CEOs of big companies.
Exactly. First of all, more people are not CEOs. I mean, this is, for example, what I'm, you know, my work is shifting to this. My work is shifting to deciding, to just making decisions based on the research that right. people are doing. I mean, you know, and you know this very well right now. So, and this is why, for example, I have an assistant, and this is why I have my team. That's great, and I have my direct reports. But even so, I still believe, you know, you know, this might change in a year or two, I don't know, but I don't think so. Even that, I am really protective of my deep work. I'm really protective of my time, because how do you want to make good decisions if you don't have really time to really get to these decisions, you know, because then the decisions will be of course based on your experience, based on your, you know, your hunch, like in this book Blink by Malcolm Gladwell.
That's
fine, but on the other hand, I see how much, you know, I have to, you know, think about several things, you know, how I have to, you know, go about things. And even I think the CEO also needs deep work, also needs time to think. So great, the Jack Dorsey can do without that. Or maybe he does have time to think, but he has it, you know, in his spare time that he doesn't have, you know, that he just, right. like really.
Yeah, and again, like,
I don't know.
Don't be so quick. This exception applies to you because you might be a CEO, but there are CEOs and the big CEOs. Like you might be someone who had, you know, 20 years of experience running big companies and you're a new CEO at another big company. That's different from running a small company like you, right? More of your work will inevitably be filled with, you know, decision making, and that's okay. But like you said, I think you're very rightly protective of your deep work because you still need it. And as you said, like with Malcolm Gladwell and Blink, people are really good at pattern matching and making decisions on top of that. But we still have to seed ourselves with the patterns.
Exactly. Yeah, that's why you know I don't want to dismiss Jack Dorsey. He's a fantastic guy, but still I think everyone really needs deep work. Everyone, you know, even right. if you're the CEO and with lots of experience. I mean, okay, just check out the richest one of the richest person on this planet. So, Mr. What's his name? The best
Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett, exactly. Warren Buffett does just that.
Yeah. He's about deep work.
He's all about deep work, you know? He has a small portfolio of companies he's investing in. When he's investing, he's basically buying a company, you know? And he makes the decisions based on lots of, as you said, pattern matching, you know? Yeah. Really reading, deep work, deep study. And this is why he's been so successful, you know?
Look where that got him.
Yeah, pretty far away, huh?
Yeah. And so, like, you made a few good points about why people don't do deep work, but I liked how Cal Newport made like a particular argument why you should, like especially now. Like he made this argument that, you know, he doesn't care about, like he only has a pragmatist argument for why you should do deep work. And the idea being there's like three groups of people that will do very well in the future. They're not like there are people outside of these three groups that will do well in the future, but like three groups in particular that he thinks are important, and those are people who can do good work with advanced technology tools, superstars as he called them, so people who are really really good at what they do, mm-hmm. And people who have capital to invest, right?
Yep.
And so He joked that unfortunately he doesn't have any quick tips on becoming a person who has capital to invest, because if he did, he probably wouldn't be writing the book. But
yes.
the other two groups of people, this is the kind of stuff that really requires deep work. You know, there's so much other kinds of work that has been either manual, physical, or, you know, white collar, but very repetitive, very, very logistical in nature. And this is getting automated, and it will get automated more and more, right? Yeah. And so, like, especially now with automation of a huge percentage of the workforce, like, you want to be in one of those two groups. But to do both, you need to do a bunch of deep work, and you have to get good at the practice, at the habit of doing deep work, because deep work is not easy, right? It's not just the contents of what you're doing, but the habit itself of doing deep work is hard, right?
I have a funny connection like with one of the anecdotes in the book, like, because he says that many people think they cannot have deep work because they have to be connected all the time. They have to, you know, they have to have email on all the time with push notifications, everything. They have to have it. And right. He said, you know, why don't you do an experiment, you know, and then like for one day, don't be connected and let's see if everything falls apart. And really, right. if like you, like one day, you know, try the experiment. And this kind of experimental, I mean, thinking about like making these kind of experiments, you know, brings me back to when my doctors said that, you know, because I have a strange condition with my skin, I shouldn't be drinking milk. And I was like, yeah, this is stupid. I mean, everybody says milk is good, so why would I drink milk then? Wouldn't drink milk. But then I thought, okay, I don't have to believe her. I can just make an experiment. If I just don't drink milk for a while, you know, certain time, and I'll see if everything anything improves. Nothing improves, then I will just know that she's you know, not right. I did an experiment after I set aside. I mean, I was supposed to, you know, not drink milk for a month. After already 2 weeks of not drinking milk, I saw radical improvement in my health. Right. So I knew for a fact that, you know, drinking milk is bad for me. Right. So, and this is the same thing, you know, he was happy that people who did an experiment, you know, of being offline or being less online for a day, they were like, nothing happened. Nobody complained. Right. No pasa nada. Like, really, it's okay. So, so that's why I encourage, you know, listeners actually to do these kind of experiments, you know, try to do something, you know.
Absolutely, yes.
Yourself. Don't just take things for granted, you know, things what we just say here and things what our book says and the Deep Work book says. Do an experiment, you know. Don't just assume because somebody said so that it's not true, you know. I mean, you can try for yourself and without any cost, actually, you know, or a small cost.
Exactly. And coming back to our previous discussions, this is why you should read a lot of books, because then you have a lot of inputs for things to try and things to compare, like different points of views on things. But as for what you're saying, that do an experiment, because you can't not be connected. There's the other meaning of can't, like physically can't, because there's like two forces at work. Like first of all, attention like literally shapes and changes brains.
Yeah. Now,
if you're only putting your attention on shallow work and never do deep work, then this is a self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
Yeah.
Because then you never did deep work, so you're incapable of having this extreme level of attention. And because you always only do shallow work and you always work distracted, you think that this is good because this is all you know, but not just like you, like psychologically, but neurologically, this is all you're wired up to do.
Exactly.
And there's the other level, which is the habits, right? Where people are junkies for like notifications and distractions. We condition ourselves that, oh, there's a push notification, things buzz and do a cacophony of sounds and blink on the screen, and we have to react because there's fear of missing out, because it might be important. And so we always react immediately to notifications, to interruptions that don't really matter. And so there's this loop created in our brains that this is what happens when there's interruption, you react, right? And like this is truly an addiction like habit loop, right? And you have to break it, because you're screwed if you're incapable of removing yourself from distractions and, you know, working for a few hours straight without being distracted.
I also want to come back to this notion, like what we were speaking about, you know, in I think two episodes back or three episodes back,
right,
about how I'm the best person to check my email.
Yes.
You know, it's like in this deep work, it's again the same thing. You know, people like the CEOs of important companies are checking their own email, you know, just like I thought I was the best person to check my email. You know, they don't have this habit of actually offloading this kind of work that they shouldn't be doing and focusing on true value work, on work that they are supposed to be doing, their value that they can bring to the world, you know?
Right.
I have an assistant to text my email because I spend 3 hours a day doing email. Like,
right.
That's easy. Like, why? Right. And he in this book, he was like, the author was speaking about this, that, you know, why don't they just, you know, figure this out? Why are they, you know, so, but again, it's this bling, is this, you know, push notification, is this, you know, I get so many emails, I am so important, you know, I get so many emails. You shouldn't be optimizing for amount of emails you're getting, you know?
Yeah. And this is also a good thing to notice, delegate and eliminate things that are shallow and not worth it, right? Like you as a CEO might inevitably have to do more work that's just shallow in nature, you know, communicating, talking to people. Yeah. That's, you know, that's not deep work, but it's fine, right? This, you're a CEO. But there's other stuff that you have a lot of, like shallow work that you don't have to do. You can delegate exactly. someone else or just ignore. You know, it's fine. It's sometimes fine to actually not do things. You know, just because someone is on your list as something you could be doing doesn't mean you should be doing this, because you have to, you know, you have to look at the kind of the power law, the 80-20 rule or whatever, right? If like focus your work on the things that truly matter, and there's a bunch of things you could be doing, and this is usually like shallow things you could be doing, but you know what? It sometimes just doesn't matter. And what it kind of does, maybe you don't have to be doing it and you can delegate it to someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was a fantastic phrase. I really loved it. Like in several books before, I already heard about this, that, you know, we should be responsible, which means be able to respond to things. Like, you know,
responsive, I think would be.
No, not responsive. Responsible. Like, the idea is that, yeah, I don't know, because responsive means you respond fast. No, the idea right. is that you don't respond fast. The idea is that you create a response. Like, for example, somebody angers you and you don't get angry back. You decide how you react to this. It's really hard right. because we are freaking humans. So, so it's really hard. But there was this phrase here. You are what you're focused on.
Yes.
And I love this phrase. This is so good. I mean, just for this phrase, this book is worth it, you know? you are what you're focused on. So as you said, if you're focused on shallow work, you are doing the shallow work. And that's all you're wired to do.
Oh, and this is not just a nice phrase. It's like quite literal. Like this is the neuroplasticity
exactly.
at work, where you put your attention, you know, the neurons that fire together, wire together. That's another phrase I like from Your Brain at Work.
Okay? Yeah.
The neurons that fire together, wire together. So when you put attention again and again on the same thing, it just gets, it's connected, and this is the brain path that gets fast. So what do you want this mechanism to work on? The shallow stuff, the distractions, the social media, or maybe the things that really matter?
Yeah, and that's why. For example, when there are moments where I get, because I get, you know, I get sometimes angry, or I get, you know, I react to things, I overthink things. So when there are moments that I get like this, I repeat this phrase: you are what you're focused on. So just focus on something great, or focus on something different. And it's hard. It's still hard, you know, but it works. It really works. Like I shift my focus and I think about something deeper, and then the other thing disappears. It just goes away. It's
yeah.
I love it.